Good evening. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Leanne, and I'm an alcoholic.
Leanne.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and to help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we're going to be discussing the first part of step four. And if y'all will help me welcome our panel, we've got Melissa and Jonathan. So step four is made of a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And we're going to start on page 63 in the big book. If you want to follow along, you can. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. Jonathan?
My name is Jonathan, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jonathan.
This is one of my favorite funny parts of the big book here, where it says, next we launched out on a course of vigorous action, because so many times, and I know a lot of people in here probably have experience with that, When I talk to newcomers and I talk to them and they say that they just did the third step and they're on their fourth step, very rarely do I see people launching on courses of vigorous action to write down all the stuff that they screwed up in their life, you know. And I probably would have done the same thing, but my sponsor was on me pretty hard to get the steps done quickly so I could help other drunks. So let me qualify myself a little bit. We're going to talk about resentments today, and my drinking actually started on a resentment. It was a super intelligent thing to do. I watched my father suffer and die from liver and pancreatic cancer for 2 years, onset by drinking too much. Normal people would probably, I don't know, raise some money for cancer research, maybe run some 5Ks or something like that. They probably wouldn't drink after watching what it did to somebody. It's from such an early age. But I was angry that, you know, my daddy died, and I thought that people should pay attention to me. And I decided to start drinking. And my early drinking career, not to get too far into it because it doesn't have a whole lot to do with resentments, was basically a case study in long bouts of untreated alcoholism followed by uncontrollable drinking bouts where I would drink and have absolutely no idea what I was going to get into for the night. And it scared me in the beginning what I was capable of doing when I was drinking right from the onset. I really, this part of the book has always made a lot of sense to me. And except for the part that said our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to the causes and conditions, you know. That kind of hit me because, you know, it's called Alcoholics Anonymous. What do you mean it's but a symptom? I didn't understand that in the very beginning. But then my sponsor sat me down and explained to me what untreated alcoholism was. And that made a whole lot of sense to me. That's basically the state of mind that I'm in when I don't have a drink inside of me or a solution like Alcoholics Anonymous working in my life, which for me was incredibly worse than my actual drinking bouts. You know, I did dumb things, you know. I got a DUI. I actually got sent to the brig in the Navy. I was on bread and water for 3 days, which is an interesting story. And there was other various things that happened to me because of my drinking, but the stuff that I did when I was sober and trying in the act of trying to get a drink or some drugs, or just in the act of extreme arrogance or just hating myself, was crazy to behold. Just stuff normal people aren't capable of. I'd steal money from my mother, who was also suffering from cancer at the time. She had breast cancer, and was probably using that money to pay for, you know, cancer treatments and things of that nature. But when I get into that state of untreated alcoholism, I no longer care. It's about me. Everything's about me. And I need what I need right now. And if you're in my way, get out of my way. And this behavior created a lot of resentments for me, because in order to justify the actions I was taking, I had to figure out what you were doing wrong that justified it in my crazy ass head as to why I was doing these things. And I think that's all I got. I just want to make sure.
Hey everybody, my name is Melissa. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date, September 8th, 2014. My home group's West Ghent. We meet on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock over at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church in Princess Anne. A lot of what Jonathan said is the same. We launched on a course of vigorous action that was absolutely not my, sorry David, not talking into the microphone. That was not my experience. I did not launch into vigorous anything. I sat on cool my heels for a while because I had heard how awful it was to do this thing called a fourth step. And that was not something I was looking forward to, although I'd also heard that it's a very freeing process and it'll help me get all this crap out of myself that I'm not comfortable with. That I need to get out of me to help move forward. And, you know, the other sentence here, our decision was a vital and crucial step. Vital meaning this is essential. If I don't do this, I will drink again. I did. I cooled my jets. Another big part of the reason was I had an aversion to getting that thing that y'all called a sponsor. Because I wanted to work these steps my way, because I'm different and I'm special, and I'll do this the way I think it needs to be done, not the way it's worked for millions of other alcoholics to get sober. And I latched on to this thing I had heard someone tell me once, that when you do a fourth and the fifth step, you don't really have to do that with a sponsor. You know, it says somewhere in some literature, I couldn't even tell you which literature, that you could do this with a clergy member or some other variation. And being raised Catholic, I was like, perfect, I'll go to confession. You know, at this point in my sobriety, I also had no conception of God. So this was just another check off the list of something that I was gonna be able to do. And it was not successful. After about 5 months of being in the rooms, going to a lot of meetings, going to a lot of fellowship, and having done a fourth and fifth step, I wanted to drink, and I couldn't figure out why. The big part of it was I wasn't following the suggestions that y'all, who are a lot smarter than me, that had been sober a little bit longer than I have, and did this out of the book. So that's all I've got on that.
Thank you. I'm going to go over to page 64. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure, being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations.
So, I had a resentment about doing the fourth step as well, which is interesting. I was convinced that the things that I had done were so terrible, and that people in AA just wanted to know what I had done so they could somehow use it against me because I think I'm really important. And my sponsor disabused me of this notion basically by saying, "Do you? I've been sober for a while. Do you understand how many people I've taken through a fourth step?" He's like, "You're probably some combination of liar, cheat, thief, and pervert. You're somewhere in there in that little mix. And I've heard so many of them, I'll be surprised if I don't fall asleep during your fourth step. You're not that important." And it basically went on from there, you know? And that was the experience that I had. He laughed at some of the stuff that I thought was, like, really bad and explained some of the things that he had done. And I was like, "Oh, yes, okay, I see." Because this isn't about my sponsor finding out everything about me so he could somehow fix me. It's about me taking personal inventory and taking stock and being more conscious of myself a little bit. Because even when I'm up in my head, it's very hard for me to be conscious of myself. Even today at 6 years of sobriety, I don't know if that ever goes away where you're up in your head, you're able to be conscious of yourself. I don't think it does. But it's also to clear the path to do the rest of the steps and to clear this path to my higher power. I didn't want to do anything that had to do with God because I also had a resentment against God because I had this overdose of religious education, I believe is what they call it in the big book. I went to parochial school most of my life, which means I went to church about 6 days a week. And what I did, I spent most of my time as a younger child trying to fart or burp or like pull somebody's hair in front of me so I could disrupt the service because I, like we talked about before, I really like attention. Like people need to pay attention to me. And as I got older, I did more sleeping and arguing with priests and parishioners as to why Christianity was bad. And so when I came into AA the first time and we were in a church and people were praying to God, I immediately heard Jesus, "Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, blessed is the fruit of thy womb." You know, that's what's going on in my head. It's like blah, 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 blah. And I didn't want anything to do with that. I'd done confession before. It didn't work because I lied. And so this whole personal inventory, I was so involved in myself that this was the fear that I had for coming into the inventory. And I'm so grateful that I took the steps the way I did, where I basically showed up at my sponsor's house and he gave me a pen and a piece of paper and told me to write for a couple hours. Because I'm pretty sure I would have cooled my heels for a long time. I think I'm really smart and intelligent, and that was a joke. You guys can laugh. I'm not, you know. So I probably would have found a really smart and intelligent reason for talking myself out of Alcoholics Anonymous once I had processed this whole four-step thing completely through and been like, "No, I'm never telling anybody this crap." I would have walked right out the door. But my experience with the four-step was and the fifth-step was such an eye-opening event for me that I'm really glad I got it knocked out early. That's one of the things I'm really grateful for here. I think that's all I got for now. Thanks.
That is not my experience. After I did that pseudo fourth and fifth step in confession, I actually did that thing, you know, got a real sponsor that I used not just in name. You know, I would occasionally pick the telephone up and call her and do those things. And she had me, I told her I was on on step 8. Like, I just kind of bypassed 6 and 7. We were just going to go straight to 8 and 9. And she quickly saw through that, and we decided to start over. And I sat on my 4-step for a good 4 or 5 months and took my time. I don't know what I was taking my time for. I like to procrastinate. I think that it's going to get better on its own, or I'll think of a way around doing it again this way because I'm smarter than this process. And I did a lot of my writing on my 4-step in the laundromat. I hated doing laundry, and I'm like, well, if I hate doing laundry and I'm going to be doing something else that I don't like to do, I'm going to be trapped here. I may as well start writing my 4-step in the laundromat. And it was really hard at first for me because I was like, I'm not really mad at anybody. You know, I was a very isolated drinker. I thought that I didn't hurt anybody throughout my drinking, which was absolutely not the case. I began to kind of think of people and places, actually places that I had on my list first. Work was a big one. And then within work, there's obviously people. And then family members, and then boys. You guys are trouble for me, so there were several of you on my list. And it was tough to break that down. We'll get to it in a little bit, but the columns, I was okay at doing the first and second columns. The third column was a little rough, and the fourth column didn't apply. I really didn't have anything to do with that. It was, you know, the few times I ventured out there, it was somebody always did something to me. I had nothing to do with it. And that was not the case, I came to find out very quickly. And then, you know, and first we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure. Well, I didn't fail at anything. You know, I didn't get here via the court system, a DUI, an arrest. I'd never had any of those consequences. You know, I'd been employed with the same employer for 13 years. I'd had a failed marriage, but that wasn't my fault. That was his fault. He didn't, you know, pay enough attention to me, give me what I needed. You know, it didn't matter that I was drinking 3 bottles of wine a night and was in a blackout 80% of the week. That wasn't my fault at all. That was his fault for being the way he was, making me drink that much. I like to blame other people for my drinking as well. You know, and these things, you know, I'm told are me. My ego is so great that it has to be smashed. And this was a big ego smasher for me to take a real honest look at myself and the things that I had done. And that started with the people that I was angry with, and why was I angry with them? And I learned through this process, I absolutely did have a big part in every single one of my resentments. So that's all I've got.
Thanks. Verse 164. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with?
All right, so resentments. There's a great part on page 66. Sorry for skipping ahead, but it's like one of my favorite parts about resentments, where it talks about fancied or real resentments. And I am the king of fancied resentments. Like I said, I was angry at my dad for dying. I mean, that's just ridiculous, completely ridiculous. Angry at other people because I didn't feel like I was receiving enough attention, you know, because most people were focused on the fact that my dad had died and my mother was distraught. And I was just, you know, drinking, pot smoking, video game playing mess that nobody even really wanted to touch. And instead of doing lovable things, I did very quite unlovable things while this whole period and process was going on, and wondered why most people didn't want anything to do with me. So I was angry about that. I have a resentment against God and the church and all of these things. And so when we get to this part where it's talking about these resentments and trying to cure this spiritual malady, immediately my brain goes, well, they're going to talk about Jesus. We're going to hear some more about Jesus. Friggin' wonderful. That's just what I need. I did this for 15 years. I don't need any more Jesus in my life. I got plenty of Jesus. I've been baptized multiple times, confirmed, saved. Like I've done so many things with Jesus that I'm all Jesused out. And so my sponsor basically had to sit me down and very early in sobriety and say, "What do you know about God that has nothing to do with Christianity?" And I went, I guess I don't really know a whole lot about anything if it doesn't have anything to do with Christianity. He's like, "Great, that's what you know about God in terms of Alcoholics Anonymous." And then we went to this meeting with serendipity. This is the crazy crap that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're talking about this in the car, and then we go to this meeting, and I meet my first atheist in Alcoholics Anonymous who had been sober a long time and was sponsoring other people. And I'm like, holy shit, it really isn't about Jesus. And let me add another segue. I'm being recorded, and I have a tendency to curse when I get kind of spun up. And let me apologize in advance. I'm in the military, and we have a tendency to curse too much. And I'm really sorry if it offends you. If it offends you too much, I encourage you to read page 29 and call your sponsor. But anyways, I'm going to attempt not to curse, and it might not work too well. So back to resentments. I met this atheist, and this was a very interesting revelation for me, because then, later on I met Buddhists, and I met Jewish people, and I met all of these different all these different religions and spiritual walks of life that were in AA and doing Alcoholics Anonymous and had been sober for multiple years and had sponsees following them around. And this started, my journey in processing some of these things. I had a resentment against the Navy because they put me in the brig, and they gave me bread and water. They actually walked me through the mess decks, which if any of you guys aren't in the Navy, the mess deck, the mess decks is where we eat, where everybody hangs out. So we get underway. The first day we get underway to go to deployment, I'm walking through the mess decks with my arms shackled to my legs behind my back to get to the damn brig. So just about everybody on the ship knew about it in 5 seconds after that. And I was very resentful against the Navy, and funny story with that. This is the first time I had ever dealt with anybody in the Navy who didn't drink. I'm sitting in the brig, and this Master Chief walks in to the brig and walks up, and this is one of the most epic experiences I've ever had in the Navy. And walks up to the guard and says, "Hey, there's my sailor in there. Do you mind if I talk to him for a little bit?" I'm like, "Oh, Master Chief, you're not allowed to be in the brig. This is a secure area, blah, blah." He's like, "I'm a MF Master Chief in the United States Navy. Open the door." And she was like, "Oh, okay, Master Chief," and opened the brig door. And this guy walks into the brig and sits down with me for an hour and talks to me about how he doesn't drink and how he has friends that go to this thing called AA, and that people lead very successful lives and you don't have to drink to be a successful person. And this is a great experience for me, but anyways, I segue, I digress. One of the biggest resentments I ever had in the Navy, or in my life, had to deal with my stepfather. And I might be running a little bit out of time, so I might not be able to tell you the entire story right now. But my mother remarried after my father passed away, a couple years after my father passed away. She remarried this great individual that he was good for her for like the first year, and then after that he started becoming very emotionally and mentally abusive. And I was in the Navy, and I came home on leave, and during this period my mom had been calling me every once in a while, and my mom never really called me much. My mom was not like the lovey-dovey caring kind of type person. She was the kind of person who would like take me to the mall and buy me stuff and then expect me to just be quiet and sit in the corner. And so her calling me a lot and like trying to talk to me about adult stuff was weird for me. And she would tell me about how she hated my stepfather and wouldn't even allow him in their bedroom and would lock the door on him and wouldn't even say a word to him edgewise. So I come home on leave, and we start going out to dinner and things of that nature. And she's talking to me about all these things, which was a very new experience for me. And about how my stepfather was treating her. But other people in my life were telling me about how my mom was using my stepfather's pills, which were quite significant pills. He had multiple sclerosis, and if any of you guys know the types of pain pills that guys with multiple sclerosis get, they're insane. They're absolutely insane. I had a headache one time, and they gave me one, and I didn't feel the effects for 2 hours, and then I knocked out for six straight hours. There was like a puddle of drool by me. It was crazy. And she was drinking, and a lot of people were worried about her. So I'm home on leave from this, and she wakes me up one morning. She's like on the bed, like stroking my head, which has never happened in the history of my mom, ever, ever, ever. She had bruises all down the side of her face. And she told me that she had tripped on the cat while she was feeding them. And that's what happened. So we took her to the hospital, and they checked her out. The doctor took me outside and checked my hands to make sure I hadn't beat my mother up. And then told me, you need to take her to the hospital immediately. So I take her to the hospital. We went to her private doctor, and then I took her to the hospital. And we walked into the hospital. She went to the back. Then about 5 minutes later, she walked out and said, we need to go now. And so I said, okay, because I don't question my mom. She graduated from Florida Law School back when women weren't supposed to be going to law school. They were supposed to be in the kitchen or in the laundry room. So, and she was like the most quintessential strong woman that I've ever met in my life. She's the model that, you know, amazing woman. And I never questioned her, because when she was angry, it was not good. So we left the hospital and we went home, and I asked her if my stepfather had been beating her, you know, which was ridiculous because he had multiple sclerosis. My mom lifted weights. My mom would have kicked his ass. And she laughed at me. And then I asked her, no, seriously, what happened? I don't think the cat story is really holding weight. And she basically gritted her teeth and said, are you questioning me? Are you calling me a liar? And I backed off and I said, no, you know, okay, that's fine. I'm just worried about you. And I kissed her goodnight. And I left with my girlfriend to go watch a movie. I spent the night at my girlfriend's house, and then the next morning I woke up and I was calling my mom because I was supposed to go out to eat dinner with her, because it was the last day that I was there on leave before I had to go back to the Navy, and she wasn't answering her phone, which is weird for a lawyer because they need to have their phone on them at all times because clients call them all the time. So I kept calling and calling and calling, and I showed up at the house and I went around the house looking for my mom. Walked in the bedroom, and she was lying on the bed. She'd been dead for about 24 hours. She'd overdosed and died while I was on leave. And it was a very surreal experience for me. I'm gonna. Oh man.
You're fine. Go for it.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. So most people in my life believe that my stepfather had something to do with this. He had a previous ex-wife. There had been some shady crap that had gone on with that. And I immediately took that and I ran with it. I ran with it hard. I had a scathing resentment against this man for a long time. He showed up. He was mysteriously out of town on business the night it happened. And then mysteriously shows up the day after when the hospital and the cops are there. And he's crying and he's inconsolable. He's outside creating this big scene about how he's so sad that my mom is dead, when he hadn't been paying attention to her for like a year. And my entire family's just sitting there with me. So it's not just me and my crazy head who thinks this guy did it. There's like 15 or 20 other like, well, upstanding individuals in society who also thinks that my stepfather had something to do with it. So I'm justified in this hatred. And I grabbed the bottle of whiskey and I downed it. And I don't remember a whole lot after that night. But for the next 6 to 8 months, I drank at this man to the point where I was calling people and asking them if they knew hitmen. I was absolutely beside myself with rage and anger. And if you sat me down at a bar, once I had a couple drinks in me, I was going to tell you about it. And I was going to tell you how my stepfather murdered my mother and how it was all his fault. And it absolutely consumed my life. And then I went on a deployment, and I wasn't to the point where I knew what alcoholism was. I didn't know that I needed a drink in me in order to feel normal and okay and to shut my brain off. So I basically had about 7 to 8 months of untreated alcoholism on this deployment. And I wasn't about to shove my head under a thing of hand sanitizer and go to town because I didn't know what my problem was. I didn't know what untreated alcoholism was. So I'm screaming at my chiefs all the time. I put my fist through a million-dollar printer and then lied about it. I was in the chaplain's office about once a week just completely crapping in this guy's ear about all of the evidence that I was collecting and all of the things that this poor guy had to listen to me talk about this for like 6 months. It was really bad. I buried my mother on that deployment at sea. It was just a complete emotional catastrophe. I can go into it for an hour, but we don't have that much time. And then I came back and I had to deal with this on my fourth step, but we'll get into that next. I want to give her some time to share about this. So make sure we share.
Thanks, Jonathan. Resentment is the number one offender. You just switch out the word it. Resentment destroys more alcoholics than anything. From resentment stem all forms of spiritual disease. I talked about work being one of the big ones on my fourth step. And when I hit my first bottom, was going to treatment after a suicide attempt. I went because I was depressed. I didn't go because I was an alcoholic. I went because I couldn't quit drinking. I was physically addicted to alcohol, and that's all that I knew. I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. And I blamed work for that. I had this total jerk of a boss who expected me to be at work on time. I work in retail. He expected me to handle customer complaints in a timely fashion. And, when they had a door that was reordered and supposed to be installed, they wanted that done within a week, not, 3 months, which I thought was kind of acceptable. A number of things like that. I'm sure he didn't, if he had known, appreciate the fact that when I was out supposed to be visiting work sites, I was actually in a bar drinking, and then went home and took a nap for a couple hours to level off a little bit. These were the things that I was doing towards the end of my act of alcoholism. And, he sat me down one Thursday evening, about a half hour before my shift was ending, and said, I'm going to give you a couple of options. You can resign, or on Monday I'm going to process paperwork to have you terminated. What are you talking about? I haven't done anything to deserve to be terminated. I'm on a final notice from work, and that doesn't take one incident. That takes a number of, incidents to add up to that process. In my delusional mind, this man is out to get me. I'm a model employee. I've been with this company for a long time. I have so much knowledge. You can't get rid of me. The world will end if you get rid of me. Like, who's going to do this job? The people in my office had obviously picked the slack up and were doing my job because I couldn't hold a pen in my hand and sign my name without shaking. I was in the bathroom half my shift having panic attacks if I didn't have enough booze in my system to calm that shaking. I was a great employee in my mind. So I was like, fine, no problem. I'll give you my decision on Monday. And I proceeded to go home and get drunk on a 3-day bender. My very supportive, also alcoholic boyfriend at the time didn't know what to do. He called my roommate and was like, I don't know what to do with her. I had stopped and got a fifth of vodka on the way home and had started drinking that in the car on the way home. And don't remember much of that weekend, but I was on time for work on Monday morning. And I called my store manager from my office and said, I'm ready, let's do this. Like, what are you talking about? He's like, I said, well, didn't Ron tell you, the conversation we had on Thursday? Let's not wait till the end of day. Let's do this now. So cocky. And he came back there and he's like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, this is what he told me. And he's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And he's the one that has to do the terminations. I said, okay, no problem. So like a good manipulator, I bided my time about 10 days. And unfortunately, Ron wasn't the most organized of individuals and didn't have a lot of paperwork. And then, a corporate auditor came in the day after this happened. So he was very tied up doing his job for about a week and didn't do anything. So I filed an HR complaint against this man. And he had to apologize to me. But he did the wrong thing to me. He was trying to take away my financial security, so I was going to get him. About 6 weeks later, I had that, you know, suicide attempt, taking a handful of pills that I have no idea. It was probably Tylenol. Well, I mean, maybe a Vicodin or two. I really couldn't tell you what. Some allergy pills. It didn't do anything. I didn't even fall asleep. I just laid there in delusion, staring at my ceiling, waiting for daylight so I could actually finally ask someone for help. Not very successful. And I came back, and I went to treatment back home in Illinois. And after 18 days, my insurance company said, "You're cured. You can go home." Again, this insurance company's through work, so they're paying for me to be there for treatment. I got short-term disability. They gave me a paycheck while I was in treatment. And I went back to work, and they moved me to a different department because they were concerned for me. They didn't want me to feel like I was being mistreated, where I had been a total piece of crap employee for well over probably 2 years at this point. But, you know, I had twisted everything around to look like poor Melissa, this poor, poor girl. And this man ended up getting moved to another store. Not by anything I had done, it just was how things happened. But that's what I did. But I wasn't angry or resentful at anything. And I didn't see my part in any of that. It took my sponsor pointing out, yeah, you have a part in every single thing on your list. And, you know, this is pre-sobriety. In sobriety, I do the same thing. I'm still with that company. May will be my 16-year anniversary. And I this fall in October, I took a position at a different store. I had been at my last store for 5 years. And for me, I heard this in a meeting last Christmas, expectations are resentments under construction. And I have the best expectations in my mind for things, and they never come out of my mouth, but they're great ideas up in my head. And I have this expectation that I'm going to go to a brand new store with nobody that I know, and I'm going to walk in there, and they're going to see, oh, she's got all this experience. She knows exactly what she's doing. I'm just basically going from one building to another, and everything's going to be exactly the same. Boy, was I surprised when that was not the case. And after 3 weeks, I wanted to drink. After 2 years of sobriety. And I couldn't figure out. And me, being the stubborn alcoholic that I am, chose not to say anything. And I sat on it for 3 weeks until I'm in the bathroom on a Monday morning at 9:30 on the phone with a friend in Alcoholics Anonymous saying, I want a drink and I don't know what to do. And this friend isn't my sponsor, you know, because I'm not utilizing the tools that you guys have given me. And, you know, I came to actually this meeting that night, and I talked to some people, and I got some some talking down from that. That, you know, maybe that's probably an unrealistic expectation to have. You know, you're new. They don't know you. You don't know them. Perhaps there's going to be a little bit of a growing period in there. And it quickly turned around. The beautiful thing out of that was the very next day, I'm in the break room at work, and I'm washing my hands in the sink, and I turn around, and there's one of you standing behind me. And I was like, oh my God, it's going to be okay. And I said to this person, I said, I didn't know you worked here. And he said, yeah. I said, well, you know, how long have you worked here? And he's like, since March. He's like, I've been on overnights for 3 weeks. How long have you been here? I said, 3 weeks. You know, there's God doing for me what I can't do for myself. Time and time again, that happens. But again, this resentment was festering and growing because I'm not doing, you know, the things that you guys have taught me to do. Picked up this, you know, bag of spiritual tools and talk to people and work through it, and, you know, not stick it up here in this crazy and try to figure it out on my own. And I do that in sobriety, you know. So doing that initial fourth and fifth step, not fifth, but initial fourth step, you know, it helps because then I know what to do now. Whereas before, I was just out there in left field, like, I don't know, let me just pour some booze over it because that'll numb it for a while. And then the next day I wake up and it's the same thing. Rinse and repeat over and over and over and over again. And until I, you know, actually come into Alcoholics Anonymous and follow this program and work these steps, it doesn't go away. It never gets better. That's all I got.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to move over to page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were quite often wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal, for when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again, and with us to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison.
Oh, man. That's pretty much how I lived my life after my mother passed away, right up until about 6 weeks after I took the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. My fourth and fifth step, I don't know if my sponsor remembers most of the stuff that I said. Probably didn't, because most of it probably wasn't important, but I'm pretty sure he remembers when we started talking about my stepfather and how angry and completely besides myself I got when we started discussing him. The resentment against the Navy thing was squashed pretty much in the first week, where he basically was like, you're lucky you're still in the Navy. The Navy should have kicked your ass out a long time ago. You better thank your lucky stars and thank your higher power that the Navy is even considering allowing you to stay. And today I'm an E6, still in the Navy. They actually promoted me and like put me in charge of people, which is pretty scary. I was to the point when I took the steps where I was willing to do this thing where people said God all the time, which for y'all now may not seem like that big of a deal, but for me then, I was completely done. I had no other options. I still wanted nothing to do with God when I showed up to the steps, but I was willing to give it a shot. And I was so beat down and dejected. I was convinced that my mother and my father were looking at me from wherever, you know, heaven or whatever you want to call it, and were just completely disappointed in my actions. The drinking that I engaged in after I got back from that crazy deployment, I kicked my best friend head into a urinal. I almost got arrested twice. I was sleeping on other people's couches and bumming rides from people and not getting in a car because I was like, you know, as long as I don't drive, I can drink how I want to. You know, that was my. So I'm living in this disgusting, depraved wallow of filth, basically, just in like that the thing from the Lord of the Rings, the Gollum thing, my precious. That's basically what I was doing, just waiting till I could, you know, off my stepfather. And so we take the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and we start talking about my stepfather, and he's like, why don't you concentrate on some of these other amends first, and you know, the stepfather thing will come, I'm sure God will reveal something in that regards. So I'm going off and doing the other amends, and about four, I felt pretty crappy right after I did the 12 steps. I don't know if anybody felt like this really awesome, like pink cloud, like unicorns and rainbows feeling after the 12 steps. I did not. I felt like a complete piece of crap as a human being that I did all this that was on this piece of paper. Then that went away for like 4 weeks. I started working with some drunks, made some amends, went on my honeymoon with my wife at the time, and things were going pretty well. And then I get back from the honeymoon and there's, you know, a couple of weeks, and then like 4 weeks in, I'm miserable. Like, I hate everybody. I want to punch my sponsor in the back of his bald head. I can't perform at work. I'm miserable at work. I come home and my wife at the time was like, why don't you go to an A meeting or something? Like, just get out of the house. And I friggin' hate everything, basically. And I'm sitting at work during one of these times, and this thought pops in my head. Now, remember what we talked about earlier, I'm the guy who steals money from you when you have breast cancer, and you're probably trying to use that money to pay for chemotherapy. Like, that's the kind of guy I am. That's my normal mental state, is how can I get things out of you to make me happy? And this thought pops in my head, you need to make amends to your stepfather. That's not a thought that occurs in my brain naturally. That does not happen, ever. That's never happened in the history of Jonathan. And so I'm thinking, like, Jesus, is that you? No, that's not. I'm kidding. Trying to lighten the situation a little bit. I start talking to myself or whatever it was, and I'm like, well, you know, I'm not making amends to this guy. There's absolutely no friggin' way I'm calling this guy and making amends to him. He doesn't even want to see me. There's no way I'm doing this. And then another thought popped in my head. How long are you going to live in bondage to this man? That's also a thought that never pops in my head. Like, that's not something that happens normally to me, ever. So I'm starting to pay attention to whatever it is going on in this mental state. Before Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have told you that if you told me that you talked to God or whoever, I would have told you were crazy. Now I don't have an opinion on it. I don't know what it was. I don't claim to have God popping in my head talking to me every once in a while. I don't know what the hell it was. I'm just telling you, there was a thought in my head that said this. And I called my sponsor about it. And he's like, sounds like you better make amends to your stepfather. So I pick up the phone and I call this guy's number. And he thinks I'm calling to ask him for money, because that's what I do when I call people. I ask them for things. And I say no. I'm doing this spiritual program thing now, and my life depends upon me repairing the damage that I've done to people in the past. And I know we don't really like each other, and I don't like you. I don't recommend making amends this way, but I firmly believe that God, you know, he does not make too hard of terms for those who honestly seek him. So for whatever reason, this worked, and I was like, but I told a lot of people that you murdered my mother, and I want to apologize for that, because all the evidence was circumstantial, and the cops never pressed charges for you on it. So if there's anything that I can do to make this better, I'm willing to do it. And he basically told me to F off and have a nice life and never call him again. But the sense of relief I felt after that was absolutely insane. It was amazing. I had never felt anything like that in my entire life. Like, just the burden and the ease and the anger. Like, I rode that high for like, that spiritual high for like months after that. The only thing that I can describe what it feels like to take all of the anger and the fear and the frustration and give it back to that man was absolutely life changing. Like, the birth of my kids is like one of the only things, and taking other people through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are the only things I've ever experienced in my life that matched the feeling that I felt after making that call. Even though the guy told me to F off, like, I was completely, I wasn't a changed man, but like my spiritual conception had changed. And I finally started to have that psychic change. Like, I knew what a psychic change was after that. I knew what the hell y'all were talking about when y'all are in here smiling and talking about psychic changes and I wanted to knock your teeth out. I knew what you guys were talking about. I had the experience. It's difficult to put into words, but I think if I hadn't made that call, I don't know how long I would have stayed in AA. I would have been so angry and pissed, I probably would have walked right out of that door. But after making that amends, just everything changed. Like, I started, it wasn't like an immediate change, there were no burning bushes, you know, I didn't part any seas, but I was able to make headway in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was able to deal with the fact that I wasn't, you know, I was pissed at my stepfather. There are a lot of people that were pissed at my stepfather, but I was also pissed at myself because I blamed myself for my mother's death. I thought that I could have fixed it. If I had actually said, no, you're going to the hospital and we're getting this fixed, I could have fixed it. I could have saved my mother's life. And this was a couple weeks afterwards. And I, you know, there was a couple nights where I just cried in the shower for like hours thinking about it. Just like, making myself miserable over this. And I was only able to process through those emotions because I had given up the pain and the frustration and everything for my stepfather. And then I was able to hear and understand and receive the feedback and the guidance I got from my sponsor, which is, you're not that important and you can't save anybody's life. Your mother probably overdosed. We'll never know if she overdosed or if she was murdered. But you're free of that bondage now. And either way, I can't save an addict or an alcoholic's life. They're gonna save themselves. We can help, but I would not have been able to save my mother's life. And I took that lesson, you know, and I learned from it today. So that's all I got. Thanks. Did I talk over your time?
You're right.
Okay.
I love this line. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leans only to futility and unhappiness. I don't know about any of you, but I don't think I've ever been happy while sitting stewing in my own crap, resentful at someone else. It's usually not a great feeling. And, you know, I blamed, after I went to that rehab and I stuck around these rooms for about 3 weeks and then I was good. I didn't need you guys. I didn't need this program. I worked the steps that applied to me off the wall. And I was good. I felt great. I didn't need to drink again. Well, one of you boys, I referred to you earlier, was still in my life. And I had put blinders on for a long time about this man and chose to see what I wanted to see. And then as I'm sobering up, I see things I don't care for. And situations happened. And after about 7 months in sobriety, I broke up with him and proceeded to drink that day, and that was okay because I hadn't drank in 7 months and it was just going to be that one time. But halfway through that night, I called and told on myself because somebody had said somewhere stuck in there, and I was like, oh, I'm probably not supposed to be doing this. I don't like this feeling. Yeah, it's helping because it's helping to make me forget, but then it's firing up all these emotions. I'm not a crier, or at least I didn't used to be before I got sober, unless I was drunk, because then I couldn't control anything, and I would go from one extreme to the other, laughing hysterically to sobbing on the floor in a ball. And you know, this man caused this. No, this was caused because I was a dry drunk. I had no solution for what was going on, and I returned to my old solution, which was to pour booze all over it. And I woke up the next morning and it absolutely did no good. Those feelings were still there. And the person I had called and told on myself with, I promised them I'd go to a meeting and I'd call that sponsor that I'd had for that last 7 months, which was a total lie. And I didn't do that because I was like, it was just one time, it'll only be that one time. And a month later, I went down to the Outer Banks for work for hurricane cleanup. I'm being of service. And it didn't count because I'm not at home anymore. So I drank again, and that just led me off onto about a 2.5 month relapse. And you know, I'm doing well at work now because I'm doing anything and everything they ask me to do because I'm still on probation. So I'm going to keep this job. I'm going to, you know, suck up and do what I need to do. I haven't made amends because I've not actually worked steps, but I'm doing what I think is the right thing to do. And I go on a weekend-long bender, kind of picking and choosing because I'm not supposed to be drinking, so my roommate doesn't know I'm drinking, but she knows I'm drinking. She just doesn't have any proof. Well, I leave the proof one night, and I wake up the next morning at 8:05, supposed to be at work at 8 o'clock, and I look in the mirror, and it looks like someone's punched me in the face. I've got a bruised chin. I maybe tripped over my cat. I have two of those, and fallen into a coffee table, into a wall, who knows. I was not very graceful when I was drunk. And I get to work and I'm a mess, and my store manager looks at me, and of course I've been a model employee now for roughly 8 months, and he's like, oh my goodness, is he back in your life? I snapped onto that real quick. Yeah, he's back. He, you know, just, and he's like, are you okay? Is there anything we can do for you? And it's a complete lie. Like, this man hasn't been around for 3 months. He's been in Florida. But I'm not going to take any responsibility for what's going on. About an hour after I get to work, I get a photograph sent to me via text message from my roommate who'd finally found my evidence because I'd finally not cleaned it up. And she said, this isn't mine. Do you know who it belongs to? I said, it's mine. She said, what are you going to do? I said, I think I need to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Will you go with me? And That turned into she had called my parents. My parents and her called me on a three-way phone call. I'm in the bathroom at work on a Monday morning at 10:30 having an intervention. And, you know, this resentment against this man had festered into this lengthy relapse. And, you know, I finally came in here and started slowly picking the things that I was going to do in this program, which I talked about earlier. And it was a little bit after my first year sober. It was actually about 15 months, and I'm sitting in Florida at my parents' house, and this man pops back up into my life. And this was someone that I was never going to do an amends to, because he had wronged me so bad that I didn't owe him an apology for anything. I owed him an apology for a lot of things, an amends for a lot of things that I had done as well. And he said, "I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous now." And I didn't know what to do. And I actually picked the phone up, called my sponsor, and she said, "Well, why don't you ask him why, if he's there on his own or a nudge from the judge?" And so I asked that question. It was a nudge from the judge. And it was enough for me to I started to gain some willingness to make amends to this man, because it still was eating me up. And through that, I made amends to him, but then I kept on going. Then I'm going to be his savior, because I've been sober for 15 months and he's come to me for help. And my ego is now going through the roof. And, you know, this man had told me he was divorced, and he wasn't divorced. And he went back to Florida to get back together with his wife, who got pregnant while we were together, and disaster written all over this. I never saw any of that. I saw what I wanted to see, because I wanted what I wanted. And then when things came to light, I got mad and I got angry, because it was his fault. I just chose not to see those things. And I held on to that for about 5 months, and finally was like, "What are you doing? You are so sick. Like, he is a man. He lives in Florida. You have no business trying to help this man get sober. Like, they have sponsors in Florida, I'm certain. And they have male sponsors in Florida. And what are you thinking?" And my sponsor had just kind of let me do my thing for quite some time. And it finally sunk in. "You know what? Maybe you should let this one go." And so I let it go. The things that I do in sobriety, because I think they're good ideas. I don't know if I've ever had a real good idea in my life. And if I think it's a good idea, it's probably a good idea if I open my mouth and ask somebody else about it. So that's all I got. Thanks.
That ends our sharing. I'm going to read just these last couple of paragraphs. On page 66, we turn back to the list where it held the key to the future. We prepare to look at it from an entirely different angle. We begin to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancy or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick, that we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us. They, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully bring a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we restore our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. So if you come back next Monday, we'll be talking about the fear inventory and the sex conduct inventory. And if y'all can help me thank Melissa and Jonathan. Seven traditions. reporting declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their in-group, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And are there any AA-related announcements tonight? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will home group members raise your hand? Just see one of us after the meeting if you're interested in joining this group. Newcomers, is there anyone in the first 30 days of sobriety that are here tonight that would like to introduce themselves? We just want to welcome you. If you just give us your first name. We do have literature over on the table. Books have a price in them. You can see any home group member after the meeting if you want to purchase a book. There are also newcomer pamphlets over there in the yellow envelopes and meeting directories. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you're willing to be a sponsor, will you please raise your hand? If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship at AA, you can come up and see me after the meeting. I'll be glad to answer any questions you might have about sponsorship. Smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. And all of our meetings are audio recorded, and you can check out any upcoming events on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, I'd like to thank our panel for sharing again. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting. Some of us go out to dinner after this. It's a place called Plaza del Sol up on 22nd and Colonial. So come up there, and there'll be some folks up there tonight for dinner. And do I have someone to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Sure. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something that you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great offense will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. And we'll place the Lord's prayer for those that wish to
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
Keep coming back if you want to.